I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. A recreation center in North Philadelphia got an extreme makeover this week, thanks to a group of architects in town for an annual conference. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports that the project is part of a new effort to spruce up aging facilities in Philadelphia.
Athletic Recreation Center in North Philadelphia was built in 1914. And with about 100 kids coming through every day, community members say the place was in need of an overhaul. On Wednesday, the whole building smelled of fresh paint as about 150 volunteers worked to renovate five rooms in just 12 hours.
So this was our kitchen.
Brian Sell is the facility supervisor.
We had cabinets that were falling down, a stove that smelled of gas. They took all that out. They're putting in brand new cabinets, shelving units, tables, everything.
The one-day so-called Blitz Build was organized by AEC Cares. The nonprofit brings architects, engineers, and contractors together for a service project the day before the annual American Institute of Architects Conference, which is in Philadelphia this week. AEC Cares partnered with the Community Design Collaborative based in the city. The collaborative's Heidi Levy says it's working with Philadelphia's Parks and Recreation Department to give other rec centers a fresh coat of paint and other cosmetic improvements.
There are several other buildings in the city that are very similar to Athletic, built at the same time. So we're hoping that we can use Athletic as sort of a model or a prototype for at least those buildings and maybe some other buildings that are similar to it.
Mayor Jim Kenney is also proposing a $500 million plan to make major capital improvements to these facilities, such as new heating and cooling systems. But it's tied to his proposed tax on sugary beverages. That tax's fate in city council is uncertain. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection Secretary has resigned. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports that the trigger was a controversial email.
DEP Secretary John Quigley reportedly sent an email to several environmental groups, chastising them for not doing enough to support the governor's new oil and gas regulations. A source close to the Wolf administration tells State Impact that the controversial email was the, quote, last straw for Quigley, who the source says angered administration officials and did not have good relationships with lawmakers. Quigley did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Bucks and Montgomery County water authorities are turning off the spigot in response to new drinking water contamination advisories from the Environmental Protection Agency. Let's get up to speed with Kyle Bagenstos of the Bucks County Courier-Times. Kyle, thanks for joining us once again for an update.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Before we get to the new EPA contamination thresholds, let's review the suspicions that date back years from when firefighting foams were used.
There's two chemicals there. They're currently unregulated. They're called PFOA and PFOS. And as you said, they were used in firefighting foams that have been used at these former and current military bases dating back to really the 1970s. But it's only in the past, I don't know, I'd say about a decade or so that a lot of concerns have been coming out about what these chemicals in the foams, what their effect is on human health. In 2014, as part of a nationwide sampling program by the EPA trying to find where these chemicals were, they were located in some water supplies in Bucks and Montgomery County. That would be Horsham, Warminster, Warrington, and a few smaller ones elsewhere in the county. At that point, they shut down some wells that were above what at the time was the EPA's best science on what safe levels of these chemicals were. So there were a handful of public wells shut down that would go into municipal systems and several dozen private wells from homeowners using groundwater on their own.
Now, how have those parts per billion guidelines been changed?
They've dropped significantly. So Thursday, the EPA announced new guidelines for these unregulated chemicals based on a lifetime of exposure. So the prior levels were only supposed to account for a couple of weeks to maybe a month of exposure. You know, you visit a relative or a friend and you're there for a short period of time. This is what they felt was comfortable. Now, these new levels account for a lifetime of exposure. So what's safe for somebody to consume over, say, 70 years? And the numbers dropped pretty significantly. There's two separate chemicals. They each had their own advisories previously. Now they just kind of combined and said 0.07 parts per billion is the safe threshold. Now, in a worst-case scenario, I found that a well that was considered safe just on Tuesday or Wednesday before this came out would now be about 8 times above what the EPA now considers safe to drink.
Are these chemicals, PFOA and PFOS, considered to be carcinogenic at certain levels?
The word on it from a lot of experts has been the science is still starting to come out on these chemicals, but there's a fair body of research out now that has found some associations between particularly PFOA and a couple of health concerns, including cancer.
And have there been reports of residents getting cancer, and more specifically, have there been cancer clusters reported in these affected counties?
Yes, there certainly have been anecdotal stories about people getting sick, people who have, especially residents in the nearby neighborhoods, have wondered for, frankly, decades and thought there were some unusual instances of cancer occurring. Interestingly, they actually may get some answers before too long. Just this past month, there's a confirmation from a federal agency called the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, and they're currently doing a health study in the area where they're going to go back and look at Pennsylvania state cancer data from the past 30 years and look to see if there's any unusual amounts of cancer in these affected areas.
So these guidelines came out yesterday. What's been the response today from both residents, businesses, and most importantly, water utilities?
The immediate reaction, of course, came from the water utilities. Between the three affected water utilities near these bases, which would be, once again, Horsham, Warrington, and Warminster, I believe the count is now at 8 municipal wells that have been shut down between the three of them. And that's in addition to about the same number from the first round of concerns, so a couple years ago. That was kind of the immediate effect of trying to get this levels of these chemicals out of the public systems there. The follow-up will be, you know, what occurs to private residents in the area. The question becomes, will the military adjust its response and now provide bottled water to everybody with private wells above these new levels? And early indications, I'm still working with them to get an answer on that, but it looks like they're going to be doing that.
When was the last time, or how recently, were these foams used at the bases?
So the foams are actually still currently used by the military in some situations. They've taken a lot of care to kind of limit that exposure and clean it up properly when it is used. But the Horsham Air Guard Station, I believe, still has some of these in supplies, and the Naval Air Warfare Center and Willow Grove Station were believed to have used those more or less right up into their closing.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
Kyle Bagenstos of the Bucks County Courier-Times. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Pennsylvania officials recently rolled out a new state slogan, Pursue Your Happiness. Activist Michelle Dempsey offers an alternate suggestion.
I think a more appropriate one would be Pennsylvania, America's Garbage Can.
Dempsey has formed a group that's protesting the expansion of a landfill near Scranton. The cohort of young, educated locals who've returned to raise families in the Scranton area are exposing environmental concerns as well as a generational shift, as Keystone Crossroads' Eleanor Klibanoff explains.
The city of Scranton sits in the Wyoming Valley, surrounded by lush green mountains. But just outside the city, there are a few mountains that look a little different than the others.
And see the sort of messy piles up at the top where it looks like black? That's where the active face is. That is where they're putting garbage.
Michelle Dempsey is describing the 750-acre Keystone Sanitary Landfill, where each day 520 trucks deliver more than 7,000 tons of garbage, much of it from out of state. Dempsey is the founder of a group called Friends of Lackawanna, which is trying to stop the expansion of that landfill. We're looking down on it from the aptly named Viewmont Mall.
It literally pretty much takes up the footprint of a good part of a small town.
What town is that?
To the right would be Dunmore. Below would be Troop. Mm-hmm. You could pick that up and move that footprint over there and encompasses most of a small town.
Dunmore, Scranton's next-door neighbor, is where Dempsey grew up. When she was a kid, Keystone Sanitary was actually a landfill, filling in old coal mines. Then, like so many children of northeastern Pennsylvania, Dempsey moved away for college and further away for work. She was an architect in Philadelphia and D.C. Dunmore and its landfill were in the rearview mirror. Until she designed a house for her parents back home.
I just ended up falling back in love with home. this is a place that needs bright, talented people to come back and contribute what they've learned and help make this area a better place.
Dempsey opened up an architecture firm in downtown Scranton, hoping to help revitalize the city. She became a self-described cheerleader for Scranton, a young voice in an aging town. By then, the coal mines were full, and the landfill was becoming more of a trash heap. Residents had become accustomed to the smells, the birds, and the constant truck traffic. But Dempsey, among others, became increasingly worried about bigger issues, like air pollution and leachate, basically trash juice, leaking into the groundwater. But what could she do? The landfill was already there.
When I was getting the smells up at the lake, I thought, I think there's less than 10 years left on this permit. All right, you know, I'm gonna grit my teeth and wait the permit 10 more years, and then it's over. This thing's capped. We're done.
The landfill has about 8 years of capacity left. But now the company has applied to the Department of Environmental Protection for a 40-plus year expansion. They want to fill in the valleys between the four trash mountains already piled up. The landfill would dominate the skyline. It already dominates the region economically. Keystone Sanitary pays Dunmore and Troop significant host fees, about $4 million of Troop's annual $6 million budget. If the expansion goes through, Dunmore stands to earn nearly $200 million over 50 years. That's not all, according to Al Magnata, spokesman for Keystone Sanitary.
We provide a lot of employment to the area. We provide a lot of assistance to the communities, both in charitable and services. But we believe it spins off a lot of business to the local economy that would not exist if it ceased to be there.
Keystone Sanitary and its owner, Louis DeNaples, hopes these benefits will appease any local concern. Requests for an interview with DeNaples were answered by Magnata. DeNaples is the patriarch of a powerful Scranton family, a former casino owner with a felony conviction on his record. He has deep connections in the area and has supported charities and local government in Dunmore and Scranton for years. Here's Pat Clark, the co-founder of Friends of Lackawanna.
They give a heck of a lot of money away to people and causes and help a lot of people out. I don't think anyone would dispute that. It does not give you a blank check to grow your business on the back of this community.
Dempsey and Clark say their issue is with the landfill, not the person. But the person is what made it so hard for them to gather support in the beginning.
It has given them insulation from people speaking out. It has given them insulation from people wanting to join our cause with a loud voice.
But times have changed in Scranton. A new generation has different hopes for the city than their predecessors in power.
Friends of Lackawanna tends to be primarily a lot of people who moved back to the area, like Pat said, and are raising young families and have started businesses and chose to be back here because we love it. We don't feel anybody has the right to do what's happening here.
Friends of Lackawanna is gaining momentum. A recent event had nearly 500 attendees, and local government leaders have joined the cause. Even Senator Bob Casey, who's from the area, has opposed the expansion. Casey has also proposed national legislation that would slow the flow of garbage into Pennsylvania, the nation's largest importer of trash. Ken Reisinger, Deputy Secretary for Waste at the DEP, says, controversy or not, the agency will do a thorough evaluation of the expansion proposal.
We base our decisions on science. Just because someone doesn't like something doesn't give us enough to deny an application where a landfill would have satisfied all the permit requirements.
In Scranton, that decision is anxiously awaited by newcomers, old-timers, and everyone in between. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media collaboration focusing on Pennsylvania cities, their problems, and potential solutions. WHYY leads the initiative. Still ahead this evening, learning from the legacy of Ross Perot's political career.
It does show that images can change during the course of a campaign, which would probably be a good thing for Trump because his overall image among Americans at this point is quite negative.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Apparent Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump releases the names of 11 potential Supreme Court nominees. What do Americans make of the move? For answers, let's check in once again with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
rather than scrutinize each of the 11, we know the regard that the public has for Congress and dysfunction in government. What do Americans think about the Supreme Court in general?
Well, it certainly does better than Congress, but that's not saying much. Congress is one of the lowest institutions that we rate. 45% of Americans at our latest update said they approved of the job the Supreme Court is doing. Right now, Obama, by way of contrast, job approval rating is about 52%. So that's actually higher than the Supreme Court, and Congress is down in the teens. I think one of the key figures that I would tell you about is Republicans' approval at 27% of the Supreme Court, Democrats 67%.
Does that disparity shift the other way when it's a Republican in the White House?
It does to some degree. The Supreme Court, more generally, I would say, and this is our research finding over the years, has become more politicized than it used to be. But in recent years, it not only shifts depending on who's in office in the White House, but more importantly, probably it looks like it shifts after some controversial decisions, which can be interpreted as going one way or the other.
Hey, Frank, last week we noted that Donald Trump would be the first non-politician since Dwight Eisenhower to occupy the White House, though I confess I forgot that there was an idiosyncratic billionaire who did fairly well in the interim.
We're talking now about U.S. Naval Academy graduate Ross Perot, who ran back in 1992. Now, the distinction is he didn't run as a Republican or a Democrat. He ran as an independent, but he had a lot of similarities to Donald Trump. And I think one of the things that we're gleaning from an analysis of Perot's trajectory through the 92 campaign is how much that his image changed. It went up, it went down. Part of that driven by Perot himself, who dropped out and got back into the campaign. But it does show that images can change during the course of a campaign, which would probably be a good thing for Trump because his overall image among Americans at this point is quite negative.
Now, you say that Perot ran as an independent. Many Republicans would deny that Donald Trump is truly a Republican. He has talked about what his first 100 days of office might look like, and let's look at some of those key issues and how they resonate with the public.
Our analysis shows that quite a few of his high-profile actions would not go over very well with the average American. Let me give you some examples. Famously, he claims within the first 100 days he would already have the design work beginning for building that wall with Mexico. But our polling and the polling for almost every other organization that I can see shows the average American definitely negative on the idea of building a wall. The idea about trade treaties we have talked about, he says he would begin scrapping our treaties. Our overall take on that is Americans are not in a hurry to scrap those treaties and actually see international trade as a plus rather than a minus. Also, the idea about a ban on Muslims, were he to attempt to enact that, every poll that I've seen shows the significant majority of Americans are opposed to a ban on Muslims. So all of those things wouldn't go over all that well with the American public.
Frank, lastly, questions about Prince's estate following his passing last month raises questions about the importance of having a will. What percentage of American adults have a will?
All right. What would be your guess, Steve?
85%.
Well, about half that. 44%. Clearly, it changes by age. Only 14% of millennials have a will. But even when you get to 65 and over Americans, unfortunately, getting into that range where people start passing away, it's just 68% who have a will. So over 3 out of 10 older American senior citizens don't have a will at this time, and that's what I think legal authorities would tell us, not a good thing.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Philadelphia is going in a decidedly different direction for the 4th of July concert this year. WHYY's Tom McDonnell reports that organizers are calling it something for everyone.
Leslie Odom Jr., the man who plays Aaron Burr in Broadway's Hamilton, will be the MC and one of the performers on July 4th on Philadelphia's Ben Franklin Parkway as part of the Welcome America celebration. Jeff Guaracino, head of Welcome America, says they're trying to make it an earlier night by starting the fireworks at 10.
It also helps save the city $40,000 in city service costs by not going into an expensive city second shift. And it also helps us in terms of giving people a safe, fun experience because it's only dark for an hour.
Unlike in past years, the Roots will not play the festival. Instead, the musical theme of the night will be a tribute to TSOP, the Sound of Philadelphia, with the OJs, Harold Melvin's Blue Notes, and the Intruders with the Urban Guerrilla Orchestra. And it's a return of a familiar performer on the Parkway, the Philly Pops, who will be part of the concert to celebrate America's birthday. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production from Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the helm this week, Al Banks, Diana Martinez, and Adam Staniszewski. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.